The book of Leviticus is the book of access. And the book of Leviticus teaches us how to have access to God. Not by what you think it should be or how man's philosophy thinks it should be, but by the method that God defined. Your rightful place is to be seated in the Holy of Holies. But you can't get there from here. You can't get there as long as you have guilt, as long as you have shame, as long as you have idolatry. Then you're stuck outside the tabernacle. And no matter how much and how sincere you are and how hard you try and how hard you study or anything, it doesn't matter. It's immaterial. It doesn't mean anything in the economy of God. Because by God's law, there's a particular way by which access is gained. And that's through, again, I won't try to confuse you at all, but you can't even get to the tabernacle unless you've gone through the purifications, the waters, the ashes of the red heifer, the cleansing of the leper, and the cleansing of the adultery. And then you can't get into the tabernacle unless the sin offering and the trespass offering has been taken care of outside the camp. And you walk into the door of the tabernacle. And there's a whole lot of other things that happen in there. You end up with all the sweet savor offerings. Now, this sounds really complicated, but it isn't. It's simply the vehicle, the path that Christ took, so that in every possible situation that you could be in, that man could be in, he already paid the price. He already has granted and gained access. So there's no situation, whether it's interpersonal, whether it's personal, whether it's, I mean, the farthest reaches of human depravity or human confusion or whatever, that Christ hasn't already paid the price. But you won't know that unless you apprehend these offerings. Because otherwise you'll blame somebody or blame yourself, and you'll walk in this. You walk the lie. You live the lie. Now, most of what the world knows about blood is only the first merest, you know, that by the blood of Christ our sin is forgiven. By the blood of Christ our trespasses are forgiven. But that is the merest of merest beginning. By his blood we have 1,000,000 times more. But again, it doesn't do us any good unless you know it. When we go through the process of the first fruit offerings, and I read Deuteronomy 26, and it talks about how you have an inheritance, and then you can, you know, possess that inheritance. And then you can dwell in that inheritance. Most Christians have some vague idea that they may possess an inheritance somewhere. They're not too sure what that means. But the idea of possessing the inheritance is, for the most part, foreign. And the idea of dwelling in the inheritance is almost unheard of. And so that's my only job. Is to cause you to see what you already own. Not by anything I do, but by seeing that by one offering he has perfected forever them that are sanctified. The book of Leviticus comes from the idea of the tribe of Levi, because Aaron, no, I don't want to get into that. Trust me on that right now. This little chart is on the trespass offering. Now, I want you to look at something. Turn to Leviticus 1. Chapter 1 of Leviticus is about the burnt offering. Chapter 2 is about the meat offering. Chapter 3 is about the peace offering. And finally, in chapter 4 and 5, you get to the sin and the trespass offering. It's the same. The idea is that God presents it from his perspective. From his perspective, the burnt offering is the most important. But you can't apprehend the burnt offering unless you've gone the other direction. Unless you've started with a trespass offering, then to the sin offering, then to the peace, then to the meal, and then to the burnt. If you try to apprehend the burnt offering before you apprehend the sin or trespass offering, then you're lost. It'll just become mismatch. You'll be like stealth. So, but it's the same in the description when God described the tabernacle in Exodus. The first thing God described in the tabernacle in Exodus was the Ark of the Covenant. And then the last thing he described was the curtain. But it's, you can't get, you understand, he described what was important to him from his viewpoint. But we can't apprehend it from that. So if people try to study the tabernacle or these offerings on the basis of how they're presented in the Bible, it'll do nothing but confuse you. Now, I've said it many times, and I don't think anybody believes me, but the idea that there's more revelation of Christ in the book of Leviticus than there is in any other book of the Bible. And yet it's the least studied book by survey. It's even less studied than Jude. Does everybody have at least a hunger for this? A little bit? All right. Why is there the major fruit of the fall of man? If you read Genesis 2 and 3. Was shame. I don't know that we've ever talked about that in here, but fundamentally the human race is shame-based. And your whole life is a constant, constant struggle to overcome the shame. Shame of what? Well, you're not sure. There's some few little points that you may remember that you have a feeling of shame about, that are, you know, that you have the symptoms of hiding. But for most of you, the shame is so hidden that it's never come even into your consciousness. And so the fall of man produced the shame of Adam being, you know, Adam telling, and Adam's response to it was, you know, we were naked. And so there, why are you hiding in the tree? We were naked and we were ashamed. Well, spiritually, you're hiding. You've spent your entire life hiding in the trees because of shame. And I can think of things that I'm ashamed of. But I don't know how to deal, I don't know how to get to the core of the shame. And it still tries to raise its head. I mean, even though, I mean, I've studied this, I know it inside out. I've never met, this may sound crazy, but I've never met anyone that knew the Bible as well as I did. And that's probably totally egocentric, but I've met people who knew the history of the Bible, there's thousands of people that know the Greek and Hebrew better than I do, and that But I don't know anybody that knows the mystery of the parables and what it means at the core better than I do. And it's still, the shame is still present. And that's why there's a difference between the sin offering and the trespass offering. It's easy to chronicle the mistakes that we make. If we don't chronicle, somebody else will. Right? But it's very rare that somebody deals with you at this core level of shame. And the reason is that you have to deal with the mistakes before you can get to the shame. So what we're going to study first is the trespass offering. And I'm going to hopefully try to show you that there is no mistake that you could have ever made, whether it was a sin against God, or a sin against yourself, or a sin against your fellow man, or a trespass against, I should say, that Christ hasn't already paid the price and dealt with in the sin offering. We're going to talk about levels of apprehension of this trespass offering, so that we can get to the sin offering. Because otherwise, you will be this trespass offering. This of all things in the universe that the snake doesn't want you to understand is a sin offering. He doesn't care if you understand the blood of Jesus, and he doesn't care if you understand that you make mistakes and he atoned for it. But he doesn't want you to know that the essence of you is covered and taken care of. You know, I talked last night for hours. I was a friend of mine in Plano. It started out about the meaning of sex. Interesting, you know.
How did that subject come up?
But it ended up talking about the difference between the trespass offering and the sin offering. And these people weren't even, didn't care about Christianity. They just cared, they cared about it. Having a socially acceptable place for their kids to be raised, but there was no interest in God's stuff. But somehow they got interested. And it just blew them away, the idea that there was this difference between trespass or mistakes and sin and who you are. I see it here all the time. That's why the sin offering in the temple was, the trespass offerings were made constantly. Somebody was always, but the sin offering was made every day, every morning, and every night. As long as the temple existed. At least that long. And that's what we must exhort each other about. Is that the core of you, your you-ness, if you will, has been covered, has been taken care of. You don't have to sweat it. You don't have to sweat the small stuff. You don't have to play the high place games to try to protect yourself. The trespass offering is for what you do. The sin offering is for what you are. And there's no situation that you can be in which that isn't covered. Now, for some of you, it's critical. I was thinking in particular of Powell. Powell is great, but of Burnett and Harry. Because there's always this core thing, this haunting dog back here that's telling him that he's flawed. Burnett or Harry. It never stops.
Teddy's heavy on me right now and has been on this subject.
Well.
It's just because I've sat here with him, and he, at this point, what he hears is, here's a whole bunch of stuff that I'm not going to understand. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to apprehend it, and I'm going to be
left out.
I'm going to be damned because I deserve to be damned. I just don't measure up. Blah blah blah. And I can feel in me what goes on in him. That shame is so big that the words that you're saying don't carry the promise of the shame being dealt with. They carry the threat of more shame.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
I've seen him do that.
Well,
I can feel it.
Yeah. I don't want... Is anybody in that position besides Harry? I'm afraid they won't understand this.
Well, mine's doing what it said. What I said earlier, he wants to simplify. He wants to say, I have the faith of Christ, or I will at some point, and I don't want to know about this. I don't need to know about this. This is... It's got to be easier than this.
Go to Romans 4. Actually, start Romans 3, verse 10. As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. Read that one. There is none that seeketh after God. And what are you doing now? I want to talk to your gut a minute. What are you doing? No matter what you say, each one of you are here trying to get it right. Trying to improve something. Anybody want to disagree with me?
Time to get fixed.
Can you see why the preaching of the cross? Can you see why the sin offering had to be offered daily? I mean, I can tell you till hell freezes over that the mystery of God is when you stop trying to fix it. The mystery of God is when you accept your death penalty. The mystery of God is when you stop trying to get it right and you just live. But every one of you, every day, spends an inordinate amount of effort trying to do something right. Whether it's raise children, whether it's work, whether it's doing this or that, the amount of self-effort that is being expended to get it right is staggering. Why? When will it happen? When will a crossover take place? Oh, it's finished. There is none righteous, no, not one. Does everybody agree with that? Anybody here want to play righteous? Huh? Okay. There is none that understandeth. That one's not too hard to agree with, is it, Burnett? There is none that seeketh after God. Well, that's a little different.
Yeah, tell them you can.
They are all gone out of the way. Have you ever heard like modern religion preaching or teaching on this, these verses?
It's been too long.
Hmm?
It's been too long. I don't remember.
It's the Jews. Oh. Or it's, you know, somebody else, but it's certainly not them. It's us. This is us. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. That means of no value to God, by the way. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Their throat is an open sepulcher. Everybody know what a sepulcher is? Right? So what does it mean if your throat is an open grave?
You know, in 10 words it says it is written, is all of this quoted from somewhere else, or just that first, there's none righteous?
No, this is all quoted
Psalm 14.
In Psalm 14, Psalm 5, Psalm 140, these are all scriptures or sentences out of the Psalms. Their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips. Whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. In the way of peace have they not known? There is no fear of God before their eyes. Can you hear that that's talking about every human being that has ever lived? The best that a human being can do is to see this and therefore run to the cross, to abandon himself. That's all that we can ever do. Now we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped and all the world may become guilty before God. It's so terrible. It's so incredibly terrible to find out that your only purpose in reading this Bible is to become guilty. I mean, it just shouldn't be that way. You understand? Something is going on here. Something is not being spoken.
What's going on in my head right now is I'm realizing that, I mean, I get myself out of the rest. And the way I do it is I think about the things that I'm going to have to get right. It's like when you started talking about the offerings, then to me, I turned that into a list of things to do, a bunch of little yellow sticky tabs. You got to do this, this, this. There's like 15 within each offering, and there's 5 different offerings, blah, blah, blah. It was like stretching out in time this list of things that I had to do in order to be right. And it dawns on me as we're reading this that I do that all the time, that I think about, like you said to me the other day, okay, so-and-so's arriving on Friday, so I want this apartment fixed up, and I want this furniture moved over here, blah, blah, blah. And, oh, and what about this over here and this over here? So I go into this thing of this list of things that I have to do, and the best I can do is just get them done. And I get depressed, and I get angry, and I get, anxious to the, yeah, but it's more like hopeless. It's being on an endless cosmic treadmill is what I do. That's what I do to get myself out of rest. And I didn't realize.
And
I didn't really real. I didn't realize the specific, like, physical, real things that I do to do that. But that's what I did.
Well, you were already worried about this apartment.
Absolutely.
You were telling me down the line, Burnett, you should remind me in the morning. I gotta go there. You know, don't let me forget.
Right.
Please don't.
Because I go into this thing, and I just.
Maybe he had too much responsibility.
No.
I mean, you've taken up giving
it
in, don't
like
doing
it,
make a decision.
Oh, we've done that many
that's
times.
Happened. That would carry the guy. No, don't do that.
No, we've done that quite a few times.
Wow. I just kept down verse 20. I keep, you know, I keep slipping back into, stepping back into this thing of trying to justify myself by the deeds of the law.
No, no.
What?
You try to justify yourself. Not this word law here is this law. This is big time law, like death penalty for starting a fire on the Sabbath, or death penalty for passing your seed through the fires of Moloch. This isn't some little man-made law that you get an attaboy for, or get chewed out for if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's not what I'm dealing with.
Well, I want you to get you out of the middle. That's my point. I want you to understand that this law is this 613 laws of Moses, for which there are 46 different death penalties for an infinite number of violations within each one of those 46. And that's God's law. Not your definition of Moloch law, which either gives you a look of condemnation or an attaboy as its reward. You're playing in the wrong ball game. Is that, you understand that?
And I can't even handle that.
Well, you're not supposed to handle it.
No, what I'm saying is I can't even handle the ball game I'm playing, much less the real ball game.
Well, the reason you can't handle the ball game you're playing in is because you haven't seen the stakes of the real ball game. That's why I write unto you that know the law. You understand?
I do understand.
Does everybody understand what I just said again?
There's a designated hitter in the real ball game. Like I did.
Okay. The whole world may become guilty before God. The whole world won't become guilty by Moloch's law. Do you understand that? Because by Moloch's law, the one that you've defined to get your attaboys, or the one you've defined to punish yourself, is something that you at least have the possibility of accomplishing. Moloch never puts impossibility before you. Doesn't look ever look impossible. Looks like something you should do. I want you to try it. You understand? If you want to, here's the ultimate in self-justification. The law said that an identical twin goats had to be presented in the temple, one sacrificed, the other sent in the wilderness. Since the temple was destroyed, there can be no sacrifices. The Jews now use a chicken and hold it over the head of people and then cut its throat. Now, that is the picture of your worship of Moloch. Can everybody see that? That's you, my friend. Stop playing in the ball game where there's no law except the one that you've invented, because you created your own Moloch. I mean, every single time that you go through that exercise, you sit there and say, well, this is what I'm concerned about this, and I'm concerned about that. And, you know, you're looking at Moloch. I can stop whatever you don't have anything to do. So how could you give any breath to that? It's because you don't know the law. Would you give any breath to that if you knew your death, you had to go to the electric chair in 5 seconds? An ultra-Orthodox rabbi performs the ceremony of Kaporal, in which a person's sins are symbolically placed on a chicken.
Oh, chicken of God, you take away the sins of
the world. The ceremony is performed before Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement. This is the saddest thing in the universe. Back to Romans. Therefore, by the deeds of the law shall there no flesh be justified in his sight, for by the law is the knowledge of sin. Okay. What does your God look like? How do you satisfy your God?
You don't satisfy God. There's nothing you can
so
do.
So God is always pissed off?
No, I mean there's nothing you can do to satisfy.
No. I don't want some right answer.
Yeah. Your answer, Mike.
Tell us what's right.
I want Mike's answer. What does Mike do to satisfy God? And who is your God? What makes Mike happy? When is Mike happy? Mike's happy when things go the way he wants them to.
Right. Well, there's no arguments, no.
Mike's happy when Mike doesn't even care about money, but Mike's happy when there's enough money to pay the bills, so there's nobody bugging him. Mike's happy when he has time to play and to do what he wants to do. And so Mike's God is kind of he's kind of lackadaisical. Huh? Alright. So my point to you is you do have a definition of God. All of us do. And that definition of God, hopefully, can be destroyed by what we're about to study. All right, let's go to Romans 4.
That would be good.
I'm not Romans. Yeah, Romans 4. That's fine. Sorry, verse 13. For the promise that he should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if they which are of the law be heirs, faith is made void, and the promise made of none effect, or the promise made vain. Because the law worketh wrath. That's all it can do.
I believe that.
Is that translated holy havoc?
I believe that.
Holy havoc.
This is God.
For the law is wrath. But God, Harry's God, the law isn't. I mean, Harry's got this all other. Harry's got, Harry's definition of wrath from his God is.
All right. Try again.
I mean, it's some really silly things, but it's like, he didn't look at me. He didn't say good morning.
He never looks at me.
Back the tape up now.
Oh,
he
knows he cracked his arms.
Yeah.
Versus lips.
He's digging in.
Better than having no God.
Oh, yeah. Shot across the bow.
Shot across the bow.
Go for talking.
Because the law worketh wrath. Now listen carefully to me. For where no law is, there is no transgression. What?
That's pretty cool.
Well, what's all this stuff then that Harry goes through? Or that Mike goes through when Sherry's doing something? Or I won't pick on the rest of you right now, but what is all that stuff?
What is it?
Huh?
What is it? Just neuroses? It reminds me of chanting in the temple. That's where I... That's what comes to mind. It's like the pitch just rises. It's not about that kind of deal.
Well, it's the price. It's the sacrifice that is necessary to your God in order for you to be redeemed from that. I mean, Harry has to get upset if his schedule is interrupted, because him being upset is his redemption. You understand?
It's like real, like Christ paid off all his debts. He said, okay, this price I need, this price I need, this price I need, this price.
Okay. I want you to, for a moment, to see what is your redemption for your Molech. What do you offer for your in the place of the blood of Christ? Private worship.
Yes, what else do you do? Isolation.
but I know, but isolation is too tame. It's private, individualized worship of your Molech. And you do it in the name of, I need time to myself. You know, on. But what is, anybody else, what is your redemption?
Worry. Anxiety. The big P. Fear.
Performance. The big P.
Anger.
Performance.
Frustrations. Irritation. Mostly anger.
Any idea what your redemption is?
I've had this one.
All right. Okay, now go to Romans 5. Verse 19. For as by one man's disobedience many were made sinners, so by the obedience of one shall many be made righteous. Moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound. But where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. Now, what I pray will happen when we read and study these offerings is that the law will enter. So that what you've confused as all of these other things, so that it can be seen for what it is. You hear me? Then when you're seen, when it's seen for what it is, then you can see that the price was paid. The law entered that sin would abound. And then it can be dealt with. And you forget about it. You can always have that anchor, so you don't have to play the lie of self anymore. Okay, when we read about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the Old Testament, we read that they offered burnt offerings and meat offerings many, many times by the early patriarchs throughout Genesis. But they never once offered a sin offering and they never once offered a trespass offering because the sin or trespass offering couldn't be there until the law was there. So the sin and trespass cannot be, sin and trespass can't be in the world. It's, by definition, it's impossible.
So Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham were in the world.
Well, they were. That's what Genesis is about. It's the book before the law. Now, you know what I'm tempted, maybe it's me, maybe this is what's going on. What I'm tempted to do is to study every point of law in which there's a death penalty. And understand that you can say all you want till hell freezes over that you're not under the law. But unless you have abandoned yourself and picked up the cross, you are under the law, and you will be judged on that day of Christ by that standard. And that's what I don't think you understand yet. And I don't know how to get from here to there with you. I don't know how you can continue to be upset as to whether or not you're, you know, and be out of the rest because some little sticky tab wasn't done, when there are 613 counts of death against you right here. Or be upset or not understand the consequences. So that's, I think maybe that's what's going on. It's probably me. Because I need, I mean, to sit and study what.
Something kind of cosmic happened when the law came into existence. I mean, because it seems like even inherently or intuitively, all people respond to, you know, the system of law. I mean, I don't know if you could raise a child that wouldn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it isn't the law. That's my point.
It's death.
It's not.
I mean, but I'm just saying, in other words, how can you say, oh, it doesn't apply to me, kind of deal?
Well, because that's. That's what, because you have replaced the law with your law. And you've said, I am not subject to the law, I am subject to my law. And therefore you believe in subjective truth. That's your truth.
But, you know, but we never factor in, when we take our law, we never factor in the element of death.
Yeah.
It's always like, it's out of the purview, it's out of, you know, death is not a part of it, but yet we know that it permeates everything. Death is everywhere. And it's like we do our best to avoid that. The illusions are just everywhere. So it's hard to, you know, we don't grow up looking at death or seeing our own death or each other's death.
Because we've isolated ourselves from it. Well,
I realize that in Maine, what you just said is the case. That, you know, put, I guess, in simple words, the way I probably thought about when I was six was, if everything's okay with my parents, then it's okay. I mean, that's the authority, that's law. If I'm not in trouble with them, then I'm not in trouble. If I don't, you know, if I'm not being punished by them, that I'm not being punished. Nothing can happen to me. So I do. I have this set of stuff that keeps, and it really is, at 50, 51 almost, it's exactly the same. If the people that are important to me aren't mad at me, then everything's okay. And I don't have to worry about it. That's what I believe.
That's your life.
Well, I think that we should, I mean, I'm not going to say we're going to go ahead and study this, you know, all of the laws, but I am going to study. I want us to look at the laws of death penalty and see how many of, and I want you to read the law. again.
Well, this is what kids are supposed to learn too, right? Or buy it or something.
Yeah. The children are supposed to have learned. We want to get really freaked out. The kids are supposed to have memorized the book of Leviticus by the time they're 11. And argue it with some, you know, not, but they have to be able to prove points in the law. It's not just memorized. Let's go to Exodus 19. Why don't somebody, Harry, read the first 7 verses, and then I want to get to the preparation of when they're just looking up at the mountain. Go ahead.
In the 3rd month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. For they were departed from Rephidim and were come to the desert of Sinai and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mountain. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, You have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him.
And all the people answered together and said, All that the Lord hath spoken we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, Lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and believe thee forever. And Moses told the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go unto the people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and be ready against the 3rd day. For the 3rd day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. And thou shalt set bounds unto the people round about, saying, Take heed to yourselves, that ye go not up unto the mount, or touch the border of it. Whosoever toucheth the mount shall be surely put to death.
Understand that? Everything connected with the law is death. That's why the human race so violently opposes studying it. Everything under the mercy seat, in the cabinet, in the Ark of the Covenant, is death. And it's that which I believe is lacking here. That you think that there is a law that will give you life. A rule, a secret that will cause you to know how to do it. That'll make you free, or make you happy, or make you well, or make you rich. That there is a law that is here that's going to make you do that. That's not what this is about. This is about whosoever even touches the mountain where the law is given is dead. Whosoever even looks under the mercy seat into the Ark of the Covenant is dead. Now I'm proposing that we go up not only and touch the mountain, but we go up and touch the law. There's nothing to gain. Unless you die. I want to kill you. You understand? I want you.
Excuse me, but I just understood what you said.
And I don't want to go.
So you said you think there's a law here that will give you life.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. It. That's I think that there's a law here that if I can understand it, and if I can remember it, and if I can whatever, then everything will be fine. And if I don't, and I just concentrate on the don't, and if I don't, then I'll die.
No, but that's the point. It's not then I'll die. It's then I will have to pay my redemption.
There shall not an hand touch it. It shall surely be stoned or shot through, whether it be beast or man, it shall not live. When the trumpet soundeth long, they shall come up to the mount. And Moses went down from the mount unto the people, and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes.
And he said unto the people, Be ready against the third day, come not at your watch. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mountain, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the nether part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long, and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. And the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mount, and the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mount, and Moses went up. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go down, charge the people, lest they break through unto the Lord to gaze, and many of them perish. And let the priests also, which come near to the Lord, sanctify themselves, lest the Lord break forth upon them. And Moses said unto the Lord, The people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for thou chargest us, saying, Set bounds upon the mount and sanctify it. And the Lord said unto him, Away, get thee down, and thou shalt come up, thou and Aaron, with thee. But let not the priests and the people break through to come up unto the Lord, lest he break forth upon them. So Moses went down unto the people and spake unto them.
Okay. Well, let's just look at the first one tonight. Okay? First of the... You understand that the, every one of the 613 laws of Moses are contained in the Ten Commandments.
There's a middle layer.
Huh?
613 and then...
Ten.
Four,
ten. And then three, and then one. One, three, ten, 613. And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. The only way you knew it was bondage is because something went wrong. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Now, simple statement, but it's the rarest of all things for a human being not to have multiple gods that he gives equal importance to. Or at the best, that he makes God, Yahweh, his chief God. And God says, by definition, you cannot have any other gods if you're going to worship me. I'm not going to be the chief among them. I'm going to be either all or nothing. Now, that's why, you understand, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Now what we just studied. What did we study in Amos Thursday night? That if any man pass his seed through the fire of Molech, to pass a seed through the fire, it's the figurative language for adopting Gentile systems. So if any of your thought processes are the same as the Gentiles, you've passed your seed, your seed, which is Christ, through the fires of Moloch. Now, do you have any idea? Just stop just for 1 second. You own all things in the universe. It's God's good pleasure to open a window and pour out everything on you so that you never have to have a concern about anything in your life ever again. But he's waiting until there's no strange God within you and with us. I mean, it's, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Now, here we get that line. We got all these laws, right? The next one is about graven images, and you know, killing and committing adultery, and on and on. And then in the New Testament, well, it says it in Leviticus also. It says that if you love the Lord with all your soul, your heart, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself, you will fulfill all of the law. Well, how can that be? First of all, he's not talking to the world. You understand that? He's talking to a body. He's talking to people that are living this life. And he promises you by saying that in the context of your neighbor, the one nearest you, during the course of your lifetime, you will be confronted with every one of these laws. In every case, you lay down your life. You don't do it once. And in that laying down your life for the benefit of your neighbor, you love your neighbor as if it were you. You treat your neighbor as if you were more concerned with his welfare than you are with your own. Then this mystery takes place. And it can only happen, and he knew it, when you knew the law. Because otherwise, at every opportunity, you would bring yourself back in. And then every time you bring yourself back in, there's a strange God there. God says, I can't pour out this abundance on you because I'm a jealous God. I can't violate who I am. Anybody, you understand a little bit?
Mm-hmm. I think it's based on the premise that God, or one of your gods, not all of them, are going to do something for you.
Yeah, if you have the proper worship, the proper redemption. If you give them the proper amount of private time, of that good quality time. But my point to you is, we just got to one. Thou shalt have, you know, thou shalt.
You know, in all the Ten Commandments that, like, they post up on church walls and you see, you never at the bottom says, and violate any of these will cause your death.
Right.
You know? So, like, you know, while you're talking, I can figure going, okay? So, like, all right, we got number 10, number 9,
suggestions for a happy life.
You know? I mean, but it's like there's never like this connection to.
Yeah.
Yeah. That the rules mean you don't do them, you die, you know? Usually we think, well, we'll negotiate for a settlement, you know, for punishment.
Well, the reason I wanted to read chapter 19 first is because that's the predicate for understanding, beginning to understand, is the fear that was on the people. The mount was quaking. It was on fire. If Ricky sort of ran up there and touched the mountain, Ricky would die.
Posted
dog. If you touched the mountain, you would die. I mean, that's the predicate for the Lord's for the Ten Commandments. And then it gets worse. It goes right down from there. But we've made, I mean, it's I think maybe clearly tonight for the first time, I have, because I spent so many years studying the law, that
you assume we know.
I assume you know.
Let me ask you something. I mean, I've heard you describe many times the way you came to believe. You didn't care about God, you didn't care about law, you didn't care about any of that stuff, right?
Right, I just saw futility.
I certainly haven't. Did you, after you came to believe, did you then care about the law? Like in a nanosecond, or
no?
Did it dawn on you, or what's your experience? Because, I mean, I'm like overwhelmed tonight to realize that my belief system is, if everything's okay with whoever I've assigned the role of my mother and father, then I don't care about anything else.
I'm sort of astounded at that. Well, but it sounds like it's not a unique thing.
It was about, you know, it was within a couple of years that I got consumed with the law, that with consumed with understanding it, because I wanted to see if by the law there was any way out. I mean, I kiddingly said that I was looking for a loophole. I really was. I wanted to see if there was any way, because I felt like I was boxed in. I mean, every part in me could not, you know, I mean, we didn't have any money. I could not go, I could get a job easy. You know, I was easier consulting to do something. I couldn't do it. And I felt like I was totally and completely hemmed in. I was boxed in and I hated it. So that's what drove me to the law. I was trying to find a door. But then the more I got consumed by the law, the more I saw that I had to, that being boxed in was the mercy of God. I saw there weren't any doors. You know, all I saw was death. And once I saw death, then I saw his law more clearly.
I mean, the scenario we read about, you know, it's like the law doesn't mean anything in the world. Egypt doesn't give a flip. God doesn't want Egypt to give a flip. I mean, he could care less. It's only when you enter and say, okay, I would like to have a relationship with you. And he says, okay, these are the terms.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I guess, the whole Christian, American Christian deal, you know, that I was raised with, all of us were raised with, it's just like, you know, Jesus Christ the hall pass. You know, get out of jail free card or something. You never even come to the face-to-face confrontation. You know, nobody wants it. Of saying, okay, God, I want to have a relationship with you. He says, okay, here's the law. You know.
Because then
Christ becomes, you know, you see your need for him instead of it just being like, oh, here's this, you know, cupcake.
Everybody yeah, he becomes Tammuz.
Right. This nice thing.
But that's why, see, and this sounds stupid, but I thought that, I guess I thought it until tonight, I thought that people had at least an understanding of the law, of the death penalties.
Well, you said what you said about, if you're not in a state of abandonment, you're judged by the law, and you have an inkling that that would be possible.
Well, I mean, you see the vanity of something, the end of it is death. I mean, it's the death of your belief in that thing. And if you go after it and you get to the end, you get to it and you say, there's nothing here. I mean, you're just like...
Right, but I think that the component that is missing in some of, because of the culture maybe, I don't know why, but and maybe it's probably just because of time, because the cosmetic is being formed, the subtleties of it, of the bride, that it has to be taken out of the philosophical and made to be experiential. And the only way to do that is when... I mean, I had that experience several times when I was, you know, I was faced with death. I mean, it wasn't theoretical. It was, boom, right in my face. And so I guess I assume that everybody has had that experience in some way. Or, I know that's not true. I don't know why I didn't think more that...
But I thought that suddenly, though, that degree of experience through the body is what, I mean, we all can't have that same kind of experience. I mean, I know what you're talking about. When I woke up and there was a guy with a knife at my throat, I mean, I can't ever...
Can't forget that.
I mean, I can't ever, like, you know, I could do like a performance art to try to show you what it was like, but never to see it, you know, within you. But, I mean, that's my experience is what I bring.
All right. Well, all I'm saying is I think that we, not just in Bananas, in the whole group, need this interface, this...
I think it's important before the offerings, because then you understand, you know, why do I need the offering today? You understand the law, you say, oh my God, forget about that offering.
Okay. I didn't realize till just now just how extremely local my God is.
He's not nationwide.
No, it's the room.
Local and state.
It's the room. Or the block. Or, I mean, it's a family God.
I had a quick question. On this before, is there any component or definition of before, like in front of or in the presence of? In verse 3, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Instead of a ranking of before, is there any...
They can't even be in the same...
In the presence of...
Can't be in the same anywhere. They can't be around. Like,
yeah, that's why, I mean, I'm hearing that as much as I have here ranking.
Yeah, you can't rank them either.
Or in front of, it's, don't even bring it around here.
You can't have
it. Presence of.
Yeah.
Except me.
Okay. Take a big guy.